Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
On this episode of The Tip-Off, something different. I want to talk through one of my investigations. I just brought out my first book. No Fixed Abode is in bookshops and online stores now. It charts an investigation that has come to consume my life for the past 3 years. And it all started in the depths of winter with a simple question. I'm Maeve McLennigan. This is The Tip-Off. In early 2018, I was haunted. The weather was freezing, and I kept spotting stories about people dying on the streets. Each article in a local paper read the same: a brief description of the tragic circumstances around the death, voices raised in outrage, cries of despair. But there was no discussion about why things were happening, and no linking up of the stories. Now, I wasn't reading all of these news stories in a vacuum. Each day on my walk to work, I would pass more and more people sleeping in tents in the centre of the city. I knew homelessness had shot up in recent years. Rough sleeping was up 169% in the 8 years previous to that. So, if more people were living homeless, I wondered if more people were dying while homeless too. That question started me on a slew of phone calls, in the hunt for this fairly simple data set. Who was collating deaths of homeless people? I tried calling the police. No, they said, but try the hospitals. The hospital press officer suggested the coroner's office. They said try the council, who pushed me to the government, who said try the councils. Weeks passed, and it dawned on me. No one had the figures, because no one knew. No one was counting. That set me on a mission. I work at a Bureau of Investigative Journalism, as part of their Bureau Local team. We coordinate a network of local journalists and concerned citizens across the country. So I started by putting the call out to them, asking everyone to tell me when they heard of someone passing away who might have experienced homelessness. And I started reaching out to homelessness organisations too. So today I wanted to tell you about just one of the stories I heard on that journey. The story of Fabian. It was late July, and I sat down to check the responses to my call out for data on homeless deaths. There, the 76th name to appear in my survey was Fabian Bayet. It was a journalist from The Big Issue who had alerted me. Liam Geraghty had heard that Fabian, who sold the magazine, had died. Liam had filled in a Google form I had created and then sent me a direct message on Twitter. Hi Maeve, just a heads up that I filed a dying homeless report on Fabian Bayet, one of our vendors who passed away recently, he typed. I replied, saying I'd spotted that Fabian's funeral was coming up. I was thinking of attending, but didn't want to cause any trouble. Liam reassured me it would be okay, and then wrote, Fabian had a sister and a brother in Belgium. I imagine they'll be over for it. One of the people I spoke to for the tribute had spoken to his sister to clear up some of the details. I believe she's called Angelique. I knew I wanted to find out more. So I booked myself a train ticket and waited. On a sunny morning in early August, I stepped off the train in Milton Keynes station. As I made my way through the station doors, my eyes were drawn to a jumble of colour. There, by the exit of the train station, someone had set up a bedroom scene. Wooden pallets formed into a bed, a lumpy duvet hiding its occupant, a bedside table, shelves, even a vanity table. They'd clearly not been thrown up overnight. This bleak pavement scene was someone's home. A little shaken, I jumped into a taxi and made my way out to the crematorium on the outskirts of the town. After I arrived, I soon found the crowd I was waiting for. The hall was fairly full, row upon row of mourners there to pay their respects. Bob Marley played as people entered and settled.
Good afternoon on this lovely Sunday afternoon. Today we're on a journey together, a journey through memories and through past times. Nothing is ever really lost to us as long as we remember it. And it is hard to forget someone who gave you so much to remember.
I tried my best to be discreet, tucking away my notebook and quietly watching as one by one friends and family members stepped up to describe happy memories of Fabian. One of those was a woman named Estella. I clocked her name and scribbled it down later as I made my way home on the train. Once home, I pulled open my computer and started to search Facebook. Soon enough, I found her. I typed out a message. "Hi, Estella. Sorry to write out of the blue. I am a journalist working on a long-term project telling the stories of those that die homeless in the UK. I came to Fabian's funeral service today and was touched to see so many people sharing fond memories of him. At some point in the future, I'd really like to write about Fabian, his life, his goals, his friendships. I wonder if you'd have time to meet for a chat about this. I'd love to hear more of your memories of him," I wrote. A few hours later, my phone pinged with a reply. "Hi, Maeve. Yes, I would love to talk more." And there was more. Estella added me to a group message, which included a woman called Angie, Fabian's sister. So I sent a similar message to Angie, and she too agreed to talk. Angie is Belgian, like Fabian, so we set up a Skype call. My French-Canadian colleague, Charles Buteau, helped me with the translation, as I eagerly listened to all the memories Angie had of her brother.
Donc, comme Maeve le disait dans son courriel, elle fait un livre sur l'itinérance au Royaume-Uni, sur les sans-abri au Royaume-Uni et en lien avec tout ce qui s'est passé dans les dernières années.
And she described how it was hard to talk about Fabian, but she thought it was important.
Notre enfance,
c'est difficile, oui.
Oui, mais c'est important aussi pour moi de pouvoir parler de Fabian. Donc l'enfance de Fabian, c'était un grand frère gentil, tellement gentil, trop gentil, mais doué d'une intelligence.
She described her brother as gentle, maybe too gentle, she said, but smart. He would always ace all of his exams and tests without ever trying. She explained how Fabian had had a traumatic relationship with his mother. He joined the Navy in his late teens to get away, but he came back from his Navy service a different man. He started taking drugs and soon got into trouble with the law. So he fled from Belgium to the UK and set up home in a series of squats all across London. Angie was really helpful filling in the blanks about Fabian's early life, but I also wanted to know more about what he had been up to in the years before he died. So I found myself travelling out to Milton Keynes again, this time to meet Estella and another local woman, Kim, at an allotment in Stony Stratford, just outside Milton Keynes.
Yeah. So this was the bench.
He would come here and this would be his
chill time. It's like meditation time. And he'd sit on that bench and he'd be here for a long time. I think that's the thing with Fabian, is that because he was so outdoors, in every sense of the word, like, he had so much patience to sit outdoors, and he would just be in places like this and sit for hours upon hours. And, you know, he would bring sometimes a can of brew with him. He'd always have a special brew with him. And maybe that's what sort of intimidated maybe some of the others.
It was his appearance. Estella explained how the Fabian she knew was a bit of a hippie at heart. He'd sold the big issue in the town for years, and they'd become friends after starting up a conversation when she bought the magazine.
He always told me about people in Stoney. He always told me all the stories, all the things that were going on, which is why he was called the Belgian Waffle. You know, he would literally just tell you everything.
I didn't know that. Was his nickname for ages.
Oh, really?
No, I didn't. So this is where his...
He was very proud of telling you that was his nickname.
If you didn't catch that, Fabian's nickname in the town was the Belgian Waffle, because he liked to talk so much. She'd even had Fabian stay with her one bad winter, but in the end, he ended up on the streets.
When somebody is a serious alcoholic and addict, they don't always know how they're behaving. They're not always aware of it. So however lovely he was, and I was so grateful for him being at my house, because I feel that he taught me a lot. But you saw the other side, and that was very difficult, and we had to lay down laws and say, you know, you can't come back here when you're out of your face, because
it's your home, and also you had a daughter, didn't you?
Exactly.
It's about rules.
So in the end, because of those rules, he would go and sleep outside, you know, because he chose his addiction over having the warmth, or, you know, in the end, I say chose his addiction, you don't choose your addiction necessarily, you know, but the power of his addiction led him to sleep outside rather than having the roof over his head, which in the end, so he got really ill when he was at my house, and
was that when he went to hospital?
And that's when he went into hospital, when he was there for 2 weeks, and that was really unlike Fabian too, but they really were, you're not leaving, you're not leaving.
He was yellow,
in the end, he discharged him. He did discharge himself, even though there was internal bleeding.
Ill with liver,
He was all swollen, he was yellow.
His stomach was, it was like that. You know, it was hard and solid. It was, there was stuff going on inside.
Fabian left hospital and gave up drinking for a time. He even managed to travel abroad.
Well, this is what happened. He managed to get to India, and this was my
message
from Fabian when he got to India. Greetings from Nepal, top of the world. And I put, yay, nice one, Fab, you made it. So back in 9 days, then 5 weeks in Stoney, and only then leaving for Goa for the winter. I was like, cool, get on the meditation and spiritual path and find your spirit. He says, I finally did all that.
I heard how later Fabian had moved to Mapplethorpe, up in the north of England. And I spoke to someone who knew him up there. She was able to fill in some details about how he died. And I also managed to get my hands on the coroner's and police reports. The details in them were grim. The day before he died, Fabian had been seen by the police, and he'd told them he had taken large quantities of painkillers, but he refused to get help. Instead, he went back to his tent with his friend Mark. He threw up a few times in the night. The next day, Mark went to the shops and returned to an awful sight. Fabian passed out, the tent splattered with blood droplets. The swollen veins in Fabian's esophagus had ruptured, causing him to vomit and cough up large amounts of blood. A tragic consequence of psoriasis of the liver. So, by now, I had a picture of who Fabian was, and how many lives he had touched. I wanted to know what contact he had had with official services, so I put in a query to the council, but I got no reply. From what I heard from local people, he'd barely engaged with any official services. Fabian had struggled with addiction issues for years, using both alcohol and hard drugs like heroin. Drug and alcohol abuse accounts for over a third of the deaths of all homeless people in England. In fact, people experiencing homelessness are 7 to 9 times more likely to die from alcohol-related diseases, and 20 times more likely to die from drugs than the general population. And drug-related deaths amongst homeless people were increasing. But why? I dug into reports and studies and found that in 2012, the government had changed who was responsible for heroin and morphine services, shifting contracts from NHS to local authorities. Related deaths doubled over the next 5 years. And I found that council budgets for alcohol and drug treatments had been cut by 18% since 2013. So the services needed by people like Fabian had been cut right back. And then I heard about a chilling Catch-22 situation, with people being told they couldn't get treatment for addiction issues until they'd had their mental health issues treated. But then the mental health teams were telling them they couldn't access treatment until they were clean of their drug and alcohol addiction. It was an impossible situation to be in. It was all really worrying. And I put in a Freedom of Information request to the local council where Fabian lived, and found there had been no review into his death, no exploration of whether support services could have helped him more. I was shocked, but I knew there was more to the story. Stay tuned for more after this.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Fabian was one of the many, many names I'd collected by now. I'd been travelling all over the country, trying to get a robust data set of all those who had passed away. The fact that there was no official data held still rattled me, but I was beginning to understand that all the figures around homelessness were flawed in some way. Even the data on how many people were sleeping rough was up for debate. Councils provided different figures, either estimates or the number of people counted on one single night. Some people had criticised that second way, warning that councils could actively try not to find people, to keep their official numbers down. I was curious about that, so I found a way to go along to one of these counts. It was taking place on a cold winter's night in Islington, London.
Okay, I'm going to run through a briefing now. Sarah is somewhere walking around with
At the council offices, I watched as groups of volunteers huddled around to listen to the briefing being given by the head of homelessness services.
So some of you go out in pairs.
I was put in a team with a council outreach worker, a man who knew the area well, and a local councillor. We set off to our assigned patch, the area around Old Street roundabout.
Please don't climb over any fences. Yeah? Don't go into any dark alleyways or something like that, or anywhere where you don't see an exit area. Yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Your health and safety is very, very important. You'll have a torch here.
Yeah.
Don't shine it in someone's eyes.
Yeah.
Wherever you
Yeah, definitely.
If you need to engage with someone or so, it's best to maybe, you know, give people arm's length or so forth. If someone has a judgment, I say someone doesn't want to.
It was a strange mission, and I was glad my colleagues knew what they were doing. I would have missed many of the dark shapes we passed in hidden doorways.
We've suspected that somebody might have been sleeping here, but we found him earlier, around a month ago, and he's now actually, you know, Islington housing, and he's now in supported accommodation, doing a
good
computer course, and everything like he's doing fantastic work.
Amazing. So that cardboard there, that's not a sign of
cardboard could be a sign of somebody actually, you know, sleeping there.
After a long cold night, we made our way back to the council office. We had counted 5 people in our patch, and we later find out there were 43 people counted across Islington on that night. I was a bit surprised at that. We'd found fewer people than I was expecting. But actually, it wasn't that surprising, because it was the depths of winter, and the next borough over, Hackney, the winter shelter was open. So many people who usually slept rough in the area could have gone there. Indeed, when the official figures were collated from around the country and announced a few months later, there was a lot of shock at the numbers. Nationwide, the statistics suggested there'd been a small drop in rough sleeping, the first drop of any kind in 7 years. But that just didn't tally with many people's daily experiences, working with those on the streets. So I found the true number remained unknown. The data that we had just wasn't reliable. Weeks and then months passed. We kept up the project. Members of the Bureau Local Network across the country would get in touch if they heard of a death. I kept travelling around, hitting the phones, trying to talk to everyone I could think of, to add more names to our data sets. And by October, we had it. The first annual figure ever created. 449 people who had died while homeless all across the UK that year.
Today, after months of investigating this issue, the Bureau of Investigative Journalism presents a report as groundbreaking as it is stark.
For months, I'd been working, not allowing myself to feel too much. But one day, the month after that figure came out, I attended a service at St Martin's in the Field, a grand white stone church that sits just off Trafalgar Square. The service was held every year, and commemorated those who died in London while homeless.
A very warm welcome to all of you to St Martin in the Fields today. It's lovely to see the church so full. I would like to welcome especially all those who have known homelessness in their own lives, those who are still homeless at this present time.
Sat in the cool of the church, I felt a strange sensation wash over me.
You'll be directed to come up to the altar row by row, and at the altar you too will take a card with a picture by Don with a name to remember during the coming year. Keep that card with you and remember that name.
Donato Barbieri, Richard Barlow, Mark Barwise, Lee Bassey, David Bailey, Leslie Beard, Alwyn Benine, Frederick.
For months I've been working on this puzzle, trying to get to a number of those who died, and working away with an objective journalist's mind. I was used to keeping a certain journalistic distance from my investigations. You often need to be able to do the job. But there in the church, listening to all of these names, all the sadness and horror of what I'd been researching hit me.
President Brown, also known as Christian.
As the names were read out, 165 in total, I recognised many of them.
Belinda Cameron.
The names kept going, minute after minute. I sat on the pew and cried.
Raymond Clark. Michael Clark. Spencer Clements. Christopher Cochran. Catherine.
Never found me yet. Never found me yet. Jesus Black. Never found me yet. This can't be all I know. Only love.
This wasn't the only memorial I would go to. Across the country, people had started to talk about the deaths of people experiencing homelessness. And that had been buoyed on by the fact that the Office for National Statistics had produced their first ever official data on people dying homeless, prompted in part by our work. So I travelled the country and saw plaques and memorial statues being put up, services being held, memories being shared. And in one day, I found myself back in Stony Stratford.
Hey, hey! Hey, hey! Hey, hey! Good people of Stony Stratford and welcome, visitors. Please pray silence for the unveiling of the new plaque dedicated to the life of Stony's very own celebrity and personality, Mr. Fabien Baye.
I had returned because Estella had been busy. A local artist had been commissioned to draw a portrait of Fabien and his beloved dog, Pippet. And today it was being unveiled. It was an honour to be there to see the picture revealed. Now, in the spot where he used to sell the big issue, Fabien's smiling face peers down at passers-by. A little bit of him still there, etched in the memories of his friends and relatives. Later, I got a word with the local town crier.
Can I just ask a quick question?
Certainly.
I'm a journalist. I work for the Bureau for Investigative Journalism. We've been doing a long-term project on homeless deaths.
Uh-huh.
I came to Fabien's funeral, but I didn't see the procession, but
yes.
I saw photos and you were out as
indeed.
Part of that.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that quite unusual? That...
No.
That?
I'm going to get a bit choked.
Sure.
He was a lovely bloke. Knew him well, because we're obviously bounding the street sort of thing. So obviously, you know, sometimes with Danny, I'll come down, stand with him, give a shout out, get people to buy the big issue. There's a lovely photo by one of the locals, Victoria Halton, of me and Fabien stood together just here. I'm ringing the bell and he's sort of like giving it a dance and stuff.
Oh, lovely.
And so, yeah, when he passed, and I knew the funeral was coming through town, I sort of like, had to stop, book the afternoon off work, come down and pay me respects.
Oh, so you did that in your own,
yep.
Yeah, just out of your own. Oh, it was a really lovely thing. There's not many.
He's a lovely bloke.
Yeah, he seems like it. It's quite remarkable. Well, it's lovely that he's touched so many lives.
Oh, in a big way.
Yeah, and I care so much. How long had you known him?
Like, ever since moving to Stony.
Okay.
Yeah.
How long ago was that?
Well, I first moved here in about 2002, but I moved back to here about 4 years ago. 4 years now.
Okay.
4 years.
So quite a long time.
Yeah.
And what's it, because I've been hearing different things from different people about what they remember about him. What is it that you remember?
I used to do quite a lot of work for shelter when I was younger. I used to live in squats. So I could, it was like going back and meeting an old friend. He was so similar to so many people I knew. There was that sort of camaraderie where there was nothing selfish about him. Because when you don't have anything, you've got nothing really to sort of have stolen. So you give yourself to everyone. And being such an open bloke.
It seems like he's touched so many people so deeply, and this is just beautiful.
It is.
I mean, not
it's
many
wonderful.
Towns would care this much, memorialise something like this.
No, we love the man.
Well, thank you so much.
You're
I really
welcome.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Over the coming months, I continued my mission and logged the deaths of many more people. We counted 800 in all across the UK. Prompted by the Office for National Statistics, the Scottish National Records Office started to count deaths too. What had started as what I thought was a simple question had turned into years of work. I uncovered many stories of people like Fabian. I wrote about a lot of them in my book, No Fixed Abode. And in it, I grapple with and uncover just how the UK has got to this situation. How years of budget cuts have whittled away vital services. And I lay out what I think we can do to escape this torrent of deaths. So that's all for this episode of The Tip-Off. I've put a link to the book in the show notes, should you want to read more. And I've put some links to services in case you want to support those who are working with and for those experiencing homelessness. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back in the new year with more episodes. Take care of yourselves. Bye for now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.